Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
Pleasant memories. I lived for a time in a little town and served a church right next door to Concord, and often spent time in the what they call the tap room of the Concord Inn, and walked past the Alcott's home, and walked in Thoreau's woods. This was after he'd burned part of them down, and it was a great place to be, still is. Well, that little alien creature in the film E.T. brought millions to tears as he gazed up at the distant planets, plaintively calling, "Home, home." For home is, after all, one of the most evocative words in our language, which, when we hear it, summons a surge of sounds and sights and smells, of voices, places, and feelings. Home has squeezed or slipped into the lines of countless poems, plays, and syrupy songs for the longing and the lonely. The poet Whittier wrote in Snowbound, "What matter how the night behaved, what matter how the north wind blew, blow high, blow low, not all its snow could quench our hearth, its ruddy glow." Some of you may remember having to memorize that in high school. And here in this poem by Sidney Royce Lysaght are all those promises of protection, of holding and harboring that home may conjure. Amid the boundless and unknown, each calls some guarded spot one's own, a shelter from the vast we win in homely hearths, and make therein the glow of light, the sound of mirth, that bind all children of the earth, the brotherhood. And when the rain beats loud upon the window pane, and shadows of the firelight fall across the floor and on the wall, and all without is wild and lone on lands and seas and worlds unknown, we know that countless hearth lights burn in darkened places, and discern inwoven with the troubled plan of worlds and ways unknown to man, the shelter at the heart of life, the refuge beyond doubt and strife, the rest for every soul outcast, the homely hidden in the vast. And doubt not that whatever fate may lie beyond us, soon or late, however far afield we roam, the unknown way will still be home. Dorothy, lost in the mad, surreal world of Oz, shuts her eyes tight and chants, "There's no place like home, there's no place like home." The lesson of Dorothy's adventure, and there are lessons in that piece, and the lesson Lord Dorothy had to bear was clear. Oz is no place for us. consorting with witches and munchkins and wizards and flying whatever they were, tin men, scarecrows, and lions. We belong in some state of Kansasness, in a place called home. And yet the human spirit has long been drawn to wander off, scouting out some place we might come to, greener, glossier, bigger or smaller than where we are. Home used to be where our parents lived, and then it was where our grandparents lived. And now where is it? Where was it? Where has it gone? It occurs to me that the yearning was centered in humankind so that the descendants would not stay crammed into Eden, no matter how tempting, but restlessly would seek some other great good place beyond the gates. Brad Edmondson writes, "We are the people who are always talking about finding a place we can truly call home and at the same time dream of visiting Tibet or Peru. We are passionate about community issues, but forever thinking about moving away to get a better job, more money, or some other abstraction. The state of being in one place and thinking about another," Edmondson writes, "is our natural habitat. Occasionally, someone will ask me, as perhaps you have been asked, where is home for you? Well, I no longer have a quick and easy answer for that. I'm no longer even sure what the question is getting at. Years ago, when I had a more pronounced accent than I've been able to maintain, I delivered an Easter sermon in Edinburgh, Scotland, while on sabbatical in Britain. After the service, during tea and scones in the parish hall, it was revealed to me that there had been little discussion of my sermon about Easter. Rather, a woman told me that many people had been instead debating about where I came from. You don't sound American, she said, but you don't really sound English, and you certainly are not a Scot. Well, my sermon apparently had, obviously had not, stirred much interest, but at least consensus had been reached about where I came from. I was South African. Well, I am not. And where then? And when? And my current address notwithstanding, if I were told to get my Donald Duck book bag, clean out my cubby and go home, where would I go? Nostalgia, literally translated, means sickness for the past. Sickness for the past. Now, I suppose that still, to some extent, home might feel like where the parents lives, but after the parents have left their place, what then? What then? There is no more reason for that place to be home than any other place where I have lived. Where is home for you, they ask. Eventually, I might get around to saying that, well, originally I came from England, because that must be it. The questioner must want to know, or must at least be politely asking, where I began, where I came from. Some years ago, one of my daughters and I went to Transylvania to visit our partner church, and while in one of the tiny villages there in Transylvania, we came across an older man in a black suit and tie who spoke our language and told us his story. He was a minister of the local Unitarian church. Most of the churches in Transylvania are Unitarian. And he spoke of his village, and he said to us, "I have always lived in this village. I was made here." And we thought about that all the way back to the Unitarian parsonage, that this man had been made in this village. Well, I opted to take that sabbatical in England. I wanted to see if I could rediscover myself there, rummaging around in my childhood. And so I found the last house in which I lived with my parents, and I was horrified to see that developers were in the process of gutting the insides of all those Victorian row houses on our block to make condos suitable for the contemporary tasteless. And on the outside of that old row house, there had been a small balcony off my parents' bedroom. And one day, shortly after the war finally ended, we gathered flags in our hands on the little balcony to greet good Queen Mary, the daughters, and brave King George as they drove by. They had come to thank our city for our war effort. I know the king saw me. I know the princesses waved at me. But the balcony was gone. The developers had stripped them off up and down the street, house by house, and had replaced those ancient little balconies with picture windows. Picture windows. Home was gone. Home was gone. "You can't go home again," Wolfe said. "Oh, lost," he wrote. "Oh, lost." What we have lost, some of us, to varying degrees, is our sense of where we belong. What place made us? Who our people are? Where and what home is? We have become a nation of nomads and migrants, each generation stretching the fraying golden cord to home. As someone said, America's winners are discovering that something is missing from their prize. What is missing is a sense of community, a sense of belonging, a sense of home. And so we are suckers for things like home cooking soup, made in 1,000-gallon vats. We are pushovers for homemade pies made in a 5-acre factory. We are chumps for anything handcrafted, no matter how badly or where. Antique hunters want to buy something, whatever it is, out of a time and out of a way of life that has become a myth, that no longer has anything to do with us, and perhaps never will. Still, I must admit that I hang on to some extent. I do have my treasures from another time. In a corner of my study stands a large hand-hewn hay fork from some long-rested farmer's barn. I work at a massive oak roll-top desk. The walls of my study are covered with pictures of other times, with other people, other places. American Gothic on my wall. Everybody's grandparents. But for ancient peoples, home was often a place from which other worlds could be discovered. It was assumed that the world was made of real and unreal, of form and chaos. Home was the real and the formed place from which heroes would venture to bring it into order, to make it like home. The old maps marked the safe and the known places, and where they ended, drawings of monsters and warnings of here there be dragons. Explorers left the real and the familiar to venture near places of unworldly horrors, even to the edge of where the world itself ended. The great epics of journeys and adventures like those of Ulysses came from deep in the human psyche, came out of that ambivalence between the desire to remain in the safety of the known place and to discover what lies beyond the limits of the place cleared and ordered. Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Why, oh why, can't I? For our forebears, for some indigenous peoples, home was the center of existence. It was depicted as the place where a vertical line crossed with innumerable horizontal lines. The horizontal lines were all the visible roads and paths across the earth to other places. And so home was that place on the vertical line where one was closest to the gods and to one's ancestors in the underworld. And there, at home, one was also at the starting place and hopefully the returning place of all journeys. But where shall we new nomads, our clans and our tribes diminishing, where shall we find such a place as home, from where we can bring order and meaning to the world? Most Americans are now proficient migrants, packing up tents and moving on from time to time, saving the cardboard boxes for next time, assuming impermanence. Some will forget eventually how to respond to the question, where's home for you? And this congregation, is undoubtedly a microcosm of the culture in which we live. Those who have been members here for perhaps as few as 5 years can perhaps look around and not know many of the people you see, and not see many of the people you used to know. Again, as Edmondson said, the state of being in one place and thinking about another is our natural habitat. And therefore, where will we find a home? Remember the old cliche, home is where the heart is? Well, I'm almost embarrassed that I'm going to come very, very close to saying that. But I know you expect more erudition from me than that, so let me complicate it a little. Recall that the ancient understanding that home is where the vertical line intersects with the horizontal line. All the possible paths and roads to all the possible places. And where the lines intersect is home, the place from which we go forth to confront chaos, to bring order and meaning. Where lines intersect is the center of all meaning, of all being, and the center is home. And where is the center? For the Native American people, the center is everywhere. In the book Little Big Man, and in the film, as the Bluecoats invade the village of unarmed, harmless women and children, slaughtering left and right, Manifest Destiny. The chief of the village, whose name was Old Large Skins, says that the trouble with white people is that they don't know where the center is. The reason, he said, the soldiers could slaughter those women and children is that they are white. And white people don't know where the center is. The center, Old Large Skin said, the center is where God is, and the center is everywhere. The center is in this sacred kiosk, and the center is also in that sacred kiosk. The center is in you, the center is in me. The center of the self and the center of the universe are the same center. Home, then, cliche or not, is indeed where the heart is. Heart being the symbolic center of our humanness. Home is where the heart, the center, the place of ordering and meaning is made. We live in a time of amateur and professional lamentation. Poets and essayists, song makers and sermonizers lament what has been lost. Nostalgia is big business. Nostalgia, sickness for the past. And many is the commerce that knows what ails us. We may recognize that home, as a particular place, has faded into the background for many of us. Even if we can still picture something like Mom fussing with the squash and Dad carving the temple, the turkey, many of us can't fix the room in our minds. The script's the same, but the set is gone. And we can only lament that reality. We can only say or sing or write what a shame that is. And then buy more of that home cooking soup and get out our country looking clothes from L.L. Bean, even if they're made in Taiwan. And I've looked at the labels, they are. Or we can accept the reality that our ways of living change, and what is needed is not more lamentation, but the tenacious hanging on, the recovery of the deep values and ways of being which were once housed in the places we call home. In fact, it seems to me that the home we make of a place is essentially, in its essence, is essentially spiritually a reflection of the home we make within ourselves. No place can be that center from which we go forth in strength to bring order and meaning to the world, unless it is a place that has been made sacred and safe and powerful by our own inner at-homeness. This building, this space, is inseparable from your sense of yourselves as a congregation. Religious places, sacred spaces, are made religious and sacred by what the people bring to them. Many congregations call their places of gathering sanctuaries, not because they are hiding places, but places to gather strength and conviction and purpose. And so it is with our homes, our living places. They are made setting out places and havens to which to return by the inner spirit of home that we endow them with. The place we call home can now, I think, change from time to time without necessarily damaging our spirits, because the place we call home now is made home by all that is there that reflects our inner at-homeness. A hotel room can never be a home for me, no matter how much it is touted as being homey, because there's nothing of me in it. A place that is a home has about its walls the pictures that are windows from and into my soul. It has the colors that enliven me or soothe me. It has the books that continue to nurture me. And it has all those collected treasures that I have brought home to keep me in touch with other places and other times. All this has meaning and power because it is an extension of my spirit. The quest for home, then, as Joseph Campbell taught, is foremost an inner quest. We may travel far and wide to the sea or to the plains in search of fortunes or wizards, but ultimately the journey home is a spiritual journey to the center. Now, believe me, I am well aware that not everyone's journey would lead to some great good place called home. Sadly, for many, perhaps for some here, thoughts of home are journeys into darkness, fear, danger, at the very least, loneliness. It has occurred to me that often through the years, my task as a psychotherapist was to be a guide out of the soul-destroying houses and people toward a new place in which to live and thrive and be at home. But if in our time we are seeking that great good place to call home, from which we can order our world and give it meaning, the path lies inward. We will know we have arrived home when we know that we are safe where we are, at the center, when we know, too, that we can go anywhere and bring that center to any place and make it home. It is said again, you cannot go home again, but remember what Dorothy learned from the Tin Man as the rock group America sang. Oz never did give nothing to the Tin Man that he didn't already have. And what she learned from the good witch Glinda at the end of her journey was that she could have gone home whenever she wanted to.